Jonah got a job at Clara's school as a history teacher when he moved back. I still can't believe he's a teacher. I don't ever remember him talking about wanting to become a teacher. But I guess there weren't a lot of options in our small East Texas town when he decided to move back and help Jenny with Elijah. He came from the business world, but all you need to become a teacher around here is a bachelor's degree and an application. They're in short supply thanks to the shitty pay scale. You sure you don't mind keeping Elijah this week? Jenny asks me. Not at all. I'm excited. I really am excited. He'll be in daycare starting next week, so I've agreed to keep him for the 4 days Jenny works this week. Sometimes I'm surprised that Chris and I never had another child after Clara. We talked about it, but we never seemed to be on the same page at the same time. There was a stretch where I wanted another, but he was working so much that he wasn't ready. Then, when Clara was about 13, Chris brought up the idea of having another one, but the thought of having an infant and a teenager at the same time seemed a little terrifying. We haven't brought it up since, and now that I'm 34, I'm not sure I want to start over. Elijah is the perfect solution. A part-time baby I get to play with and send back home. Too bad I'm still in high school, Lexi says. I'd be a great babysitter. Jenny rolls her eyes. Weren't you the one who put a random dog in my backyard because you thought it was mine? It looked like your dog. I don't even have a dog, Jenny says. Lexi shrugs. Well, I thought you did. Excuse me for being proactive. Lexi finally takes her seat after having made her plate. I can't stay long. I have a Tinder date. I still can't believe you're on Tinder, Jenny mutters. You're 16. Don't you have to be 18 to even open an account? Lexi grins. I am 18 on Tinder. And speaking of things that surprise us, I'm still shocked you've had the same boyfriend for more than one night. It's so unlike you. She looks at Jonah. No offense.
None taken, Jonah says with a mouthful.
Jenny and Lexi have always had this kind of banter. I find it entertaining, mostly because they're so much alike. Jenny had a string of boyfriends throughout her 20s, and had there been Tinder back then, Jenny would have been Tinder queen. Me? Not so much. Chris is the only guy I've ever dated. The only guy I've ever kissed. That happens when you meet the man you're going to marry at such a young age. Hell, I met Chris before I even knew what I wanted to study in college. I guess it didn't matter, though, because I didn't last that long in college. Having Clara so young put a hold on any dreams I had for myself. I've been thinking a lot about that lately. Now that Clara is getting older, I've been feeling this gaping hole inside me, like it's sucking the air out of each day that passes by, where all I do is live for Chris and Clara. Clara finally walks into the house in the middle of my self-deprecating thought. She stops about 5 feet from the table, ignoring everyone and everything around her, as her finger moves over her phone screen.
Where have you been?
Chris asks her. She's only about 30 minutes later than usual, but he notices. Sorry, she says, placing her phone down on the table next to Lexi's. She reaches over Jonah's shoulder to grab her plate. Theater meeting after school, and then one of my classmates needed a ride. She smiles at me. Happy birthday, Mom. Thank you.
Who needed a ride?
Chris asks her. Jenny and I look at each other right when Clara says, Miller Adams. Shit. Chris drops his fork to his plate. Lexi says, Excuse me? Where was my phone call about this? Chris looks at Jenny and then at me like he's about to scold us for lying to him. I grip his leg under the table. A sign I don't want him to mention we were talking about it. He knows as well as I do that Jenny is a good source of information for what's going on in our daughter's life, and if he reveals Jenny was telling me about their conversation, we'll all suffer.
Why are you giving Miller Adams a ride? He asks her.
Yes, Lexi says. Why did you give Miller Adams a ride? Don't leave out a single detail. Clara ignores Lexi, responding only to her father. It was barely a mile. Why do you seem so bothered by it?
Don't do it again,
Chris says. I vote do it again, Lexi says. Clara looks at Chris in disbelief. It was hot out. I wasn't going to make him walk. Chris raises his eyebrow, something he doesn't do very often, which makes it all the more intimidating when he does.
I don't want you involved with him, Clara, and you shouldn't be giving guys rides. It isn't safe.
Your father is right, Lexi says. Only give hot guys rides when I'm with you. Clara falls down into her seat and rolls her eyes. Oh my God, Dad. He's not a stranger, and I'm not dating him. He's had the same girlfriend for a year. Yeah, but his girlfriend is in college, so it's not like she'll be in your way, Lexi says.
Lexi?
Chris says her name is more of a warning. Lexi nods and runs her fingers across her mouth, like she's zipping her lips shut. I'm a little in shock that Clara is sitting here acting like she didn't just call Jenny and slightly freak out that this kid was flirting with her. She's acting like she doesn't care, to both Chris and Lexi. But I know she does, thanks to Jenny. I stare at Clara in awe of her ability to pretend otherwise, but that awe is accompanied by a slight disturbance. I'm equally as impressed by her ability to lie as I am Jenny's ability to lie. It's scary. I couldn't lie if my life depended on it. I get flustered and my cheeks flush. I do whatever I can to avoid confrontation.
I don't care if he's single or married or a billionaire. I would appreciate it if you wouldn't give him another ride.
Lexi makes a move like she's unzipping the imaginary zipper on her lips. You're her dad. You shouldn't say it like that. If you make a guy off limits to a teenage girl, that only makes us want him more. Chris points his fork at Lexi and looks around the table.
Who keeps inviting her to these things?
I laugh, but I also know Lexi is right. This isn't going to end well if Chris keeps this up. I can feel it. Clara already has a crush on the guy, and now her father has made him off limits. I have to warn Chris later not to bring it up again unless he wants Hank Adams to be Clara's future father-in-law.
I feel out of the loop, Jonah says. What's so bad about Miller Adams?
There's no loop, and there's nothing wrong with him, Clara assures him. It's just my parents, being overprotective as usual. She's right. My mother didn't shelter me as a child in any sense, which is part of the reason I ended up pregnant with Clara at 17. Because of that, Chris and I take it overboard with Clara sometimes. We admit that. But Clara is our only child, and we don't want her to end up in a situation like we did.
Miller is a good kid, Jonah says. I have him in class. Nothing like Hank was at that age. You have him in class for 40 minutes a day, Chris says. You don't know him that well. Apples don't fall far from their trees.
Jonah stares at Chris after that response. He chooses not to continue the conversation, though. Sometimes when Chris wants to make a point, he doesn't let up until the person he's arguing with gives in. When we were younger, I remember him and Jonah always going toe-to-toe. Jonah was the only one who wouldn't give in and let Chris win. Something has changed since he's been back, though. He's quieter around Chris. Always lets him get the final word. I don't think it's a show of weakness, though. In fact, it impresses me. Sometimes Chris still comes off as the hot-headed teenager he was when I met him. Jonah, however, seems above it. Like it's a waste of time to try to prove Chris wrong. Maybe that's another reason I don't like that Jonah's back. I don't like seeing Chris through Jonah's eyes. What makes you say that about him? Apples don't fall far from their trees, Clara asks. What's up with Miller's parents? Chris shakes his head.
Don't worry about it.
Clara shrugs and takes a bite of her burger. I'm glad she's letting it go. She's a lot like Chris in that she can sometimes be combative. You never know which way it's going to go with her. I, on the other hand, am not combative at all. It bothers Chris sometimes. He likes to prove a point, so when I give in and don't give him that opportunity, he feels like I win. It's the first thing I learned after marrying him. Sometimes you have to walk away from the fight in order to win it. Jonah seems just as ready to move on from the conversation as the rest of us.
You didn't turn in your application for the UIL film project.
I know, Clara says.
Tomorrow is the deadline.
I can't find anyone to sign up with. It's too hard to take on by myself. It bothers me that Jonah entertains this idea of hers. Clara wants to go to college and study acting. I have no doubt she'd be good at it because she's phenomenal on stage. But I also know what the odds are of actually succeeding in such a competitive industry. Not to mention, if you are one of the few who do succeed, you're dealing with the price of fame. It's not something I want for my daughter. Chris and I would love acting to be a backup major to something that can actually sustain her financially.
You don't want to help her with it?
Jonah asks, his attention on Lexi. Lexi makes a face. Heck no, I work too much. Jonah returns his attention to Clara.
Meet me before first period starts tomorrow. There's another student looking for a partner, and I'll see if they're interested.
Clara nods, just as Lexi starts to wrap up the rest of her burger. Where are you going? Clara asks. Tinder date, Jenny answers for her. Clara laughs. Is he at least our age? Of course. You know I hate college boys. They all smell like beer. Lexi leans down and whispers something in Clara's ear. Clara laughs, and then Lexi leaves. Clara begins asking Jonah questions about the film project requirements. Jenny and Chris are in a conversation of their own, discussing everything she missed at the hospital while on maternity leave. I talk to no one and pick at my food. It's my birthday, and I'm surrounded by everyone important to me, but for some reason, I feel more alone than I've ever felt. I should be happy right now, but something is off. I can't put my finger on it. Maybe I'm getting bored. Or worse, maybe I'm boring. Birthdays can do that to you. I've been analyzing my life all day, thinking about how I need something of my own. After having Clara so young, Chris and I married, and he's always taken care of us financially since graduating college. I've always taken care of the house, but Clara will be 17 in a couple months. Jenny has a career and a new child, and is about to have a new husband. Chris got a promotion 3 months ago, which means he's at the office even more now. When Clara is away at college, where will that leave me? My thoughts are still stuck on the state of my life an hour after we've finished dinner. I'm loading the dishwasher when Jonah walks into the kitchen. He stops the door from swaying before it even starts. I appreciate that about him. He's a good dad, and he hates my kitchen door. That's two things. Maybe there's hope for our friendship yet. He's holding Elijah against his chest.
Wet rag, please.
That's when I see the spit up all over Jonah's shirt. I grab a rag and wet it, then hand it to him. I take Elijah from him while he cleans himself up. I look down at Elijah and smile. He looks a little like Clara did at his age. Fine blonde hair, dark blue eyes, a perfect little round head. I start to sway back and forth. He's such a good baby. Better than Clara. She was colicky and cried all the time. Elijah sleeps and eats and cries so little that sometimes Jenny will call me when he does cry, just so we can gush over how cute he sounds when he's upset. I glance up, and Jonah is watching us. He looks away and reaches toward the diaper bag.
I got you a birthday present.
I'm confused. Before dinner, he seemed so tense with me. Now he's giving me a birthday present? He hands me an unwrapped gift, a gallon-sized Ziploc bag full of candy. What are we, 12? It takes me a moment, but as soon as I see that it's an entire bag of watermelon Jolly Ranchers, I want to smile, but I frown instead. He remembered. Jonah clears his throat and tosses the rag into the sink. He takes Elijah from me.
We're about to head home. Happy birthday, Morgan.
I smile, and it's probably the only genuine smile I've given him since he's been back. There's a moment between us. A 5-second stare, where he smiles and I nod, before he leaves the kitchen. I don't know exactly what that 5 seconds meant, but maybe we've come to some kind of truce. He really is trying. He's great to Jenny, great to Elijah, one of Clara's favorite teachers. Why, when he's so great to everyone I love, have I been wishing he wasn't in any of our lives? Once Jenny, Jonah, and Elijah leave, Clara goes to her room. It's where she spends the majority of her evenings. She used to want to spend her evenings with me, but that stopped when she was around 14. Chris spends his evenings with his iPad, watching Netflix or sports. I waste mine away watching cable, the same shows every night. My weeks are so routine. I go to bed at the same time every night. I wake up at the same time every morning. I go to the same gym and do the same workout routine and run the same errands and cook the same scheduled meals. Maybe it's because it's my 34th birthday, but I felt like this cloud has been hanging over me since I woke up this morning. Everyone around me seems to have a purpose. Yet I feel like I've reached the age of 34 and have absolutely no life outside of Clara and Chris. I shouldn't be this boring. Some of my friends from high school haven't even started families yet, and my daughter will be out of the house in 21 months. Chris walks into the kitchen and grabs a bottle of water out of the fridge. He picks up the bag of Jolly Ranchers and inspects it.
Why would you want an entire bag of the worst flavor?
It was a gift from Jonah. He laughs and drops the bag on the counter.
What a terrible gift.
I try not to read too much into the fact that he doesn't remember watermelon is my favorite flavor. I don't necessarily remember all the things he liked when we first met.
I'll be late tomorrow. Don't bother with dinner.
I nod, but I already bothered with dinner. It's in the slow cooker, but I don't tell him that. He starts to walk out of the kitchen. Chris? He stops short and faces me. I've been thinking about going back to college.
For what?
I shrug. I don't know yet. He tilts his head.
But why now? You're 34.
Wow. Chris immediately regrets saying that when he sees how much his choice of words hurts me. He pulls me in for a hug.
That came out wrong, I'm sorry.
He kisses the side of my head.
I just didn't know it's something you were interested in, since I make plenty of money to support us. But if you want a degree...
He kisses me on the forehead.
Go to college. I'm gonna take a shower.
He leaves the kitchen, and I stare at the kitchen door as it swings back and forth. I really hate that door. I kind of want to sell the house and start over, but Chris would never go for it. It would give me something to put my energy into, though, because right now, my energy is pent up. I feel swollen with it as I think about how much I want a new kitchen door. I might remove the whole door tomorrow. I'd rather have no door at all than a door that doesn't even work like a door should work. Doors should slam shut when you're angry. I open the Jolly Rancher and pop it in my mouth. The taste gives me a feeling of nostalgia. And I think back to when we were all teenagers, craving the nights the four of us would spend driving around in Jonah's car, me and Chris in the back seat, Jenny in the front. Jonah had a thing for Jolly Ranchers, so he always kept a bag in the console. He never ate the watermelon ones. It was his least favorite flavor and my favorite, so he always left the watermelon for me. I can't believe it's been that long since I've had one. I swear, sometimes I forget who I was or what I loved before I got pregnant with Clara. It's like the day I found out I was pregnant, I became someone else. I guess that happens when you become a mother, though. Your focus is no longer on yourself. Your life becomes all about this beautiful, tiny little human you created. Clara walks into the kitchen, no longer a beautiful, tiny little human. She's beautiful and grown, and I ache at the loss of her childhood sometimes. When she'd sit in my lap, or I'd snuggle up to her in bed until she fell asleep. Clara reaches to my bag. Yay, Jolly Ranchers. She grabs one and walks to the refrigerator, opening it. Can I have a soda? It's late. You don't need the caffeine. Clara turns around and eyes me. But it's your birthday. We still haven't done your birthday board. I forgot about the birthday board. I actually perk up for the first time today. You're right. Grab me one, too. Clara grins, and I go to my craft closet and pull out my birthday board. Clara may be too old to sit with me while I rock her to sleep, but at least she still gets just as excited about our traditions as I do. We started this one when she was 8 years old. Chris doesn't involve himself in this tradition, so it's just something Clara and I do twice a year. It's like a vision board, but rather than making a new one every year, we just add to the same one. We each have our own, and we add to them only on our respective birthdays. Clara's birthday is still a couple months away, so I grab my board and leave hers in the closet. Clara takes a seat next to me at the kitchen table and then selects a purple Sharpie. Before she starts writing, she looks over stuff we've put on it over the years. She runs her fingers over something she wrote on my board when she was 11. I hope my mom gets pregnant this year. She even cut out a tiny picture of a rattle and pasted it next to her wish. Still not too late to make me a big sister, she says. You're only 34. Not happening, she laughs. I look over the board, searching for one of the goals I wrote for myself last year. I find the picture I pasted of a flower garden in the top left of the board, because it was my goal to uproot the bushes in the backyard and replant them with flowers. I met that goal in the spring. I find the other goal I had, and I frown when I read it. Find something to fill all the empty corners. I'm sure Clara thought I was being literal when I wrote it last year. I didn't actually want to fill every corner in my house with something. My goal was more of an internal one. Even last year, I'd been feeling unfulfilled. I'm proud of my husband and proud of my daughter. But when I look at myself and my life separate from theirs, there's very little I can find to be proud of. I just feel like I'm full of all this untapped potential. Sometimes my chest feels hollow, as if I've lived a life with nothing significant enough to fill it. My heart is full, but that's the only part of me that feels any weight. Clara begins to write her goal for me, so I lean toward her and read it. "Except that your daughter wants to be an actress." She snaps the cap back on the Sharpie and puts it in the package. Her goal makes me feel guilty. It's not like I don't want her to follow her dreams. I just want her to be realistic. "What are you going to do with an unusable degree if the acting thing doesn't work out for you?" Clara shrugs. "We'll cross that bridge when we come to it." She pulls her leg up onto the chair and rests her chin on her knee. "What about you? What did you want to be when you were my age?" I stare at my board, wondering if I can even answer that question. I can't. I had no idea. I didn't have any special talents. I wasn't extremely smart in any one particular subject. "Were you passionate about anything like I am about acting?" I think about her question for a moment, but nothing comes to mind. "I liked hanging out with my friends and not thinking about the future. I assumed I'd figure it out in college." Clara nods at the board. "I think that should be this year's goal. You need to figure out what you're passionate about, because it can't be being a housewife." "It could," I say. "Some people are perfectly fulfilled in that role." "I used to be. I'm just not anymore." Clara takes another sip of her soda. I write down her suggestion. "Find my passion." Clara may not want to know this, but she reminds me of myself at her age. Confident. Thought I knew everything. If I had to describe her in one word, it would be assured. I used to be assured. And now I'm just... I don't even know. If I had to describe myself with one word based on my behavior today, it would be... whiny. "When you think of me, what one word comes to mind?" "Mother," she instantly says. "Housewife?" "Overprotective." She laughs at that last one. "I'm serious. What one word would you use to describe my personality?" Clara tilts her head and stares at me for several long seconds. Then, in a very honest and serious tone, she says, "Predictable." My mouth falls open in offense. "Predictable? I mean, not in a bad way." Can predictable sum a person up in a good way? I can't think of a single person in the world who'd want to be summed up as predictable. "Maybe I meant dependable," Clara says. She leans forward and hugs me. "Night, Mom. Happy birthday." "Good night." Clara goes to her bedroom, unknowingly leaving me in a pile of hurt feelings. I don't think she was trying to be mean, but predictable is not something I wanted to hear. Because it's everything I know I am, and everything I feared I would grow up to be.
Chapter 4. Clara. I probably shouldn't have called my mother predictable last night, because this is the first time in a long time that I've woken up for school and didn't find her in the kitchen cooking breakfast. Maybe I should apologize, because I am starving. I find her in the living room, still in her pajamas, watching an episode of Real Housewives. "What's for breakfast?" "I didn't feel like cooking. Eat a Pop-Tart." Definitely shouldn't have called her predictable. My father walks through the living room, straightening out his tie. He pauses when he sees my mother lying on the couch.
"You feeling okay?"
My mother rolls her head so that she's looking up at us from her comfy position on the couch. "I'm fine. I just didn't feel like making breakfast." When she gives her attention back to the television, Dad and I look at each other. He raises a brow before walking over to her and pressing a quick kiss on her forehead.
"See you tonight. Love you."
"Love you too," she says. I follow my dad into the kitchen. I grab the Pop-Tarts and hand him one. I think it's my fault.
"That she didn't cook breakfast?"
I nod. "I told her she was predictable last night." Dad's nose scrunches up.
"Oh, yeah, that wasn't nice."
"I didn't mean it in a bad way. She asked me to describe her using one word, and it's the first thing that came to mind. He pours himself a cup of coffee and leans against the counter in thought.
I mean, you aren't wrong. She does like routine.
Wakes up at 6 every morning. Breakfast is ready by 7.
Dinner at 7:30 every night, he says.
Rotating menu.
Gym at 10 every morning.
Grocery shopping on Mondays, I add.
Sheets get washed every Wednesday.
See, I say in defense. She's predictable. It's more of a fact than an insult.
Well,
he says,
there was that one time we came home and she'd left a note saying she went to the casino with Jenny.
I remember that. We thought she'd been kidnapped. We really did think that. It was so unlike her to take a spontaneous overnight trip without planning months in advance. So we called both of them, just to make sure she was the one who wrote the note. My father laughs as he pulls me in for a hug. I love his hugs. He wears the softest white button-up shirts to work, and sometimes when his arms are around me, it's like being wrapped in a cozy blanket. Only that blanket smells of the outdoors, and it sometimes disciplines you.
I need to get going.
He releases me and pulls at my hair.
Have fun at school.
Have fun at work. I follow him out of the kitchen to find Mom no longer on the couch, but standing in front of the television. She's pointing the remote at the TV screen. The cable just froze.
It's probably the remote,
Dad says. Or the operator, I say, taking the remote from my mother. She always hits the wrong button and can't remember which one to press to get back to her show. I hit all the buttons and nothing works, so I power everything off. Aunt Jenny walks into the house as I'm attempting to power the television back on for my mother. Knock, knock, she says, swinging open the door. Dad helps her with Elijah's car seat and an armful of stuff. I power the television back on, but it doesn't do anything. I think it's broken.
Oh, God,
my mother says, as if the idea of being home all day with an infant and no television is a nightmare of an existence. Aunt Jenny hands my mother Elijah's diaper bag.
You guys still have cable? No one has cable anymore.
There's only a year of age difference between Aunt Jenny and my mom, but sometimes it feels as though my mother is the parent of both of us. We try to tell her, but she insists on keeping it, I say.
I don't want to watch my shows on an iPad, my mother says in defense. We get Netflix on our television, my father says. You can still watch it on the television.
Bravo isn't on Netflix, my mother responds. We're keeping the cable. This conversation is making my head hurt, so I take Elijah out of his car seat to get a minute in with him before I have to leave for school. I was so excited when I found out Aunt Jenny was pregnant. I always wanted a sibling, but Mom and Dad never wanted more kids after they had me. He's as close as I'll ever get to a brother, so I want to be familiar to him. I want him to like me more than anyone else.
Let me hold him,
my father says, taking Elijah from me. I like how much my dad likes his nephew. Kind of makes me wish he and Mom would have another one. It's not too late. She's only 34. I should have written it down again on her birthday board last night. Aunt Jenny hands my mother a list of written instructions. Here's his feeding times and how to heat the breast milk, and I know you have my cell phone number, but I wrote it down again in case your phone dies. I wrote Jonah's number down, too. I've raised a human before, my mother says.
Yeah, but it was a long time ago,
Aunt Jenny says.
They might have changed since then.
She walks over to my father and gives Elijah a kiss on the head.
Bye, sweetie. Mommy loves you.
Aunt Jenny starts to leave, so I grab my backpack in a hurry, because there's something I need to discuss with her. I follow her out the front door, but she doesn't realize I'm behind her until she's almost to her car. Miller unfollowed me on Instagram last night. She turns around, startled by my sudden presence.
Already?
She opens her car door and hangs on to it.
Did you say something that made him angry?
No, we haven't spoken since I left his house. I didn't post anything. I didn't even comment on any of his pictures. I just don't get it. Why follow me and then unfollow me hours later? Social media is so confusing. So are guys. Not as confusing as we are, she says. She tilts her head, eyeing me. Do you like him? I can't lie to her. I don't know. I try not to, but he's so different from all the other guys at my school. He goes out of his way to ignore me, and he's always eating suckers, and his relationship with his grandpa is adorably weird. So, you like him because he ignores you, eats suckers, and has a weird grandpa? Aunt Jenny makes a concerned face. Those are weird reasons, Clara. I shrug. I mean, he's cute, too. And apparently he wants to go to college as a film major. We have that in common. That helps. But, I mean, it sounds like you barely know him. I wouldn't take the unfollow too personal. I know. I groan and fold my arms over my chest. Attraction is so stupid. And knowing he unfollowed me already put me in a shit mood, and it's only 7 in the morning. Maybe his girlfriend saw the follow and didn't like it, Aunt Jenny suggests. I thought about that possibility for a brief moment this morning, but I didn't like thinking about Miller and his girlfriend discussing me. My father walks out the front door, so Aunt Jenny gives me a hug goodbye and goes to leave because she's parked behind both of us. I get in my car and text Lexi while I wait for Jenny to pull out of the driveway behind me. I hope you got my text last night about me picking you up 30 minutes early. You never responded. She still hasn't responded when I pull into her driveway. Just when I'm about to call her, she comes tumbling out of her house, her backpack hanging from the crease of her elbow while she attempts to slide on a shoe. She has to stop and press her hand to the hood of the car to finish getting the shoe on. She stumbles to the door, her hair in disarray, mascara still under her eyes. She's like a drunk hurricane. She gets in the car and shuts the door, dropping her backpack to the floorboard. She pulls out her makeup bag. You just woke up.
Yeah, 4 minutes ago when you texted. Sorry.
How'd the Tinder date go? I ask sarcastically. Lexi laughs. I can't believe your family still believes I have a Tinder account. You lie to them about having it every time you're around. Why would they believe otherwise? I work too much. All I have time for is school and work and maybe a shower if I'm lucky. She opens her makeup bag. By the way, did you hear about Miller and Shelby? I whip my head in her direction. No, what about them? She opens her mascara just as I pull up to a stop sign.
Oh, stop here for a second.
She begins putting on her mascara, and I wait for her to finish whatever she was going to say about Miller Adams and his girlfriend. How random that it's the first thing she brought up, and it's the only thing I've been able to think about since I gave him a ride yesterday. What about Miller and Shelby? Lexi moves her mascara wand to her other eye. She still doesn't answer me, so I ask her again. Lexi. What happened? Jeez, she says, stuffing the mascara wand back into the tube. Give me a sec. She motions for me to continue driving while she pulls out her lipstick. They broke up last night. That's my favorite sentence that's ever come out of Lexi's mouth. How do you know? Emily told me. Shelby called her. Why'd they break up? I'm trying not to care. Really trying. Apparently, it's because of you.
Me?
I look back at the road. That's ridiculous. I gave him a ride to his house. He was in my car for 3 minutes, tops. Shelby thinks he cheated on her with you. Shelby sounds like she has trust issues. That's really all it was? Lexi asks. A ride. Yes, it was that inconsequential.
Do you like him? She asks. No, of course not. He's an asshole. He is not. He's super nice. Annoyingly nice. She's right. He is. He's only an asshole to me. Isn't it weird that my father thinks he's such a bad person? Lexi shrugs. Not really. Your father doesn't even like me, and I'm awesome. He likes you, I say. He only teases the people he likes. And maybe Miller is the same way, she suggests. Maybe he only ignores the people he likes. I ignore that comment. Lexi focuses on putting on her makeup. But my mind is whirling. Did their fight really have to do with a silly car ride? It was probably the car ride coupled with the Instagram follow. Which would explain why he unfollowed me last night. Which proves he's trying to get her back. Do you think their breakup will stick? Lexi glances at me and grins. What's it matter to you? It was inconsequential. Jonah makes me call him Mr. Sullivan at school. I'm sure he'd like it if I called him Uncle Jonah outside of school, but he's just Jonah to me. I haven't known him long enough to feel like he's my uncle yet, even though he just had a baby with my Aunt Jenny. Maybe after they're actually married, I'll add the title. But for now, all I really know of him is what I've heard my parents say. That he broke Aunt Jenny's heart in high school and moved away without warning. I've never asked any of them why he broke up with her. I don't guess I really cared. But for some reason, I'm curious today. Jonah is at his desk grading papers when I walk in.
Morning,
he says. Morning. I have him for first period, so I toss my backpack in my usual seat. But I take the seat right in front of his desk.
Did Jenny get Elijah dropped off with your mom?
He asks. Yep. Cute as ever.
He really is. Looks just like his daddy.
No, he looks just like me, I correct. Jonah stacks his papers together and scoots them aside. Before he gets into the whole film project thing, I let my curiosity get the best of me. Hey, why'd you break up with Aunt Jenny in high school? Jonah lifts his head quickly, his eyebrows raised. He laughs nervously, like he doesn't want to have this conversation with me. Or with anyone.
We were young. I'm not sure I even remember.
Mom wasn't happy when you got Aunt Jenny pregnant last year.
I'm sure she wasn't. It wasn't very well thought out.
Kind of hypocritical of her, considering they had me at 17. Jonah shrugs.
That isn't hypocritical unless the action she's objecting to occurs after the objection.
Whatever that means.
It means people who make mistakes usually learn from them. That doesn't make them hypocrites, it makes them experienced.
Didn't they teach you in college not to dole out life lessons before the morning bell rings? Jonah leans back in his seat, a hint of amusement in his eyes.
You remind me of your mother when she was your age.
Oh, God.
It's a compliment.
How? Jonah laughs.
You'd be surprised.
Stop insulting me. Jonah laughs again. But I'm only half kidding. I love my mother, but I do not aspire to be my mother. He grabs one of two folders on his desk and hands it to me.
Please fill this out, even if you don't end up doing it. If you place in the top, it'll be great to put on your film school applications. Not to mention you'll have footage for your acting reel.
I open the folder to look through it. So, who is it that's looking for a partner?
Miller Adams.
My head snaps up when Jonah says his name. He continues speaking.
When you guys were talking about him last night, I remembered reading in the notes from the teacher who sponsored this program last year that Miller was on a team that placed, which means he has the experience. I asked him to sign up this year, but he ultimately turned it down. said he's got a lot going on and it's a big commitment. But if the two of you do it together, he might be interested.
I'm not gonna lie. I was secretly hoping it was Miller Adams, especially because he told me he was into film. But was Jonah not at the same dinner I sat through last night? Why would you try to pair me up with him on a project after what my dad said?
I'm a teacher, not a matchmaker. Miller is the perfect partner on this. And he's a good kid. Your father is misinformed.
Either way, Dad set hard boundaries that I already know I'm not going to follow. Jonah stares at me thoughtfully for a second, then crosses his arms over his desk.
I know. Listen, it's just a suggestion. I think the project will be good for you. But if your dad doesn't want you to do it, there's not much I can do. But you also don't need a parent's permission to sign up. You only need it for submission, and that's still several months away.
I kind of like that Jonah is encouraging me to disobey my father. Maybe he and Aunt Jenny really are perfect for each other. The door opens, and Miller Adams walks in. Thanks for the heads up, Jonah. The first thing I notice are his crimson, puffy eyes. It looks like he hasn't slept. His shirt is wrinkled. His hair is a mess. Miller looks from Jonah, to me, to Jonah. He remains by the door and tosses a hand in my direction while looking at Jonah.
This is who you want me to sign up with?
Jonah nods, confused by Miller's reaction. I'm not confused by it. I'm used to him not wanting anything to do with me.
Sorry, but that's not going to work out,
Miller says. He looks at me.
No offense, Clara. I'm sure you understand why.
I guess his girlfriend really is the reason. I gathered when you unfollowed me on Instagram 5 hours after following me. Miller walks farther into the room and drops his backpack on a desk and plops down into the chair.
According to Shelby, I shouldn't have followed you in the first place.
I laugh. Your girlfriend broke up with you because I gave you a ride in 102-degree weather? There's something off about that.
She broke up with me because I lied to her about it.
Yeah, and you lied to her about it because you knew she'd break up with you if she found out. Therein lies the issue. Jonah inserts himself into our conversation by leaning forward and looking back and forth between us. He pushes back his chair and stands.
I need coffee.
He tosses the other folder on Miller's desk and heads for his classroom door.
You two, figure this out and let me know what you decide by the end of the day.
Jonah leaves, and it's just Miller and me left in the room, staring at each other. He looks away and browses through the contents of the folder. He really could have used those extra minutes of sleep. I feel bad Jonah called him in early for this. He looks like a truck ran him over between me dropping him off at his house yesterday and him waking up this morning. I can tell whatever fight he and Shelby had, it's taken a toll on him. You look really heartbroken, I say.
I am,
he says with a dull tone. Well, not all is lost. Heartbreak builds character. That makes Miller laugh, although it's a dry laugh. He closes the folder and looks at me.
If Shelby finds out I'm working with you on this film submission, she'll never forgive me.
So that's a yes? Miller doesn't laugh at that. In fact, he seems a little bummed that I'm making jokes at his expense. He's obviously not in the mood. And honestly, I kinda don't blame Shelby for dumping him. If my boyfriend lied to me about being in the car with another girl, then followed that girl on Instagram, he'd be my ex-boyfriend too. Sorry, Miller. I'm sure she's great. If I can help in any way, maybe back up your story, let me know. Miller smiles at me appreciatively and then stands up, heading for the classroom door. He leaves the folder on the desk.
You should do the project anyway.
I nod, but I don't really care to sign up alone. For a few hopeful seconds, I was excited I might get to work with Miller on the project. Now that I had a taste of that thought, every other option tastes bitter. Seconds later, Miller is gone. I stare at the folder on his desk, then grab it and fill out the form anyway. You never know. Shelby and Miller may not get back together, and it would suck if he didn't sign up just because his girlfriend has jealousy issues. Jonah returns with two coffees, just as I finished both forms. He hands me one of the coffees and casually leans against his desk. He's been around for a few months now, and he still has no idea how much I hate coffee. This is why I don't refer to him as Uncle Jonah yet.
What was that all about?
He asks. His girlfriend hates me. Well, ex-girlfriend. I take a sip of the coffee to be nice. It's putrid.
Shouldn't be a problem then, right?
I laugh. You would think. I hand him both the folders. I filled them out anyway. Don't mention it to Miller. If he changes his mind, at least we'll have met the deadline for signups.
I like the way you think,
Jonah says. He sets his coffee on his desk and picks up a piece of chalk. He's writing the date on the board when two of my classmates walk in. I go back to my seat. When the classroom begins to fill up, Jonah turns around and eyes the coffee on my desk.
Clara, students aren't allowed to have drinks in class. Do it again, and I'll give you detention.
I roll my eyes at him, but I want to laugh at his ability to switch into teacher mode so easily, even if he is just toying with me. Yes, Mr. Sullivan, I say, mockingly. I trash the coffee, then pull out my phone and text Aunt Jenny on the way back to my seat. Me. You busy? Aunt Jenny. On my way to work. Me. It'll only take a sec. Two things. Your baby daddy is a smartass. Also, Miller and Shelby broke up. Not sure how long it'll last. Aunt Jenny. Why'd they break up? Because you gave him a ride? Me. Apparently it was the Instagram follow that did it. Aunt Jenny. That's good news. Now you get to date the guy with the weird grandpa. Me. I didn't say his grandpa was weird. I said their relationship was adorably weird. Also, he's trying to get his girlfriend back, so I don't know that I have a chance. Aunt Jenny. Ugh, that stinks. Don't pursue him then. You don't want to be the other girl. Trust me. Me. You were the other girl once? I need to hear this story. Is that why you and Jonah broke up in high school? The dots on my phone indicate Aunt Jenny is typing. I wait to hear about her juicy teenage drama, but the dots stop. Me. I tell you everything. You can't hint that you've had an affair and not elaborate. Me. Jenny? Me. Aunt Jenny.
Clara, put your phone away.
I drop my phone into my backpack with frightening speed. I don't know who Aunt Jenny cheated with, but if Jonah doesn't know about it, I don't think him confiscating my phone and reading my texts would be good for their relationship. I'll call her at lunch and force her to tell me. Even if it involves Jonah, I want to know.
Chapter 5. Morgan. I once heard someone say we're all just one phone call away from our knees. It's the absolute truth. My voice comes out in a shaky whisper when I ask, "Is he okay?" I wait for the nurse on the other end of the line to tell me that Chris will be fine, but all I get is a long stretch of silence. It feels like someone is wringing my spine like a wet towel. I want to double over from the pain. But the pain isn't physical. It's an intangible anguish that feels terminal.
I don't know details, the nurse says. All I know is that he was brought in a few moments ago, so try to get here as soon as possible.
I choke out an okay before ending the call, but I'm also positive she would have given me more information if the news were better.
If the news were better, Chris would have called me himself.
I'm holding Elijah. I was holding him when the phone rang, and now I'm clutching him even tighter, still on my knees. For at least a minute, I'm frozen on my living room floor. But then Elijah yawns, and it snaps me back into a grim reality. I call Jenny first, but her phone goes to voicemail. It's her first day back to work. She won't have her phone on her until her lunch break, but word will spread fast at the hospital, and she'll find out soon enough. I start to call Jonah next, so that he can come get Elijah, but I don't even have his phone number saved in my phone. I rush to the sheet of paper Jenny left me this morning and enter the number she wrote down to reach him. It goes straight to voicemail. He's in class. I'll call the school to get in touch with him soon. But every second I spend trying to contact someone is a second longer it's going to take me to get to the hospital. I strap Elijah into his car seat, grab his diaper bag and my keys, and leave. The trip to the hospital is a blur. I spend it whispering prayers and gripping the steering wheel and stealing glances at my phone, resting in the passenger seat, waiting for Jenny to call me back. I don't call Clara at school yet. I need to know that Chris is okay before I worry her. If they haven't already notified Jenny that Chris was in a wreck, I'll have them page her when I get inside. She can take Elijah then. For now, he's with me, so I take his diaper bag and his car seat and run toward the entrance. I'm faster than the automatic sliding doors of the emergency room. I'm forced to pause my sprint for a couple of seconds so they can open wide enough for me to enter. As soon as I'm inside, I go straight to the nurse's desk. It's a nurse I don't recognize. I used to know almost everyone in this hospital because I thought it made Chris look good for me to know everyone at his office parties. But they come and go so often, I don't even try to keep up anymore. "Where's my husband?" The words tumble out in a panic. Her eyes are sympathetic. "Who is your husband?" "Chris." I gasp for air. "Chris Grant? He works here and he was just brought in?" Her expression changes when I say his name. "Let me get someone who can help you. I just got on shift." "Can you page my sister? She works here too. Jenny Davidson?" The nurse nods but rushes away from the window without paging Jenny. I set Elijah's car seat on the closest chair. I try Jenny again and then Jonah's cell phone again, but they both go straight to voicemail. I don't have time to wait on the nurse to figure out her shit. I call the hospital and ask for labor and delivery. They connect me after the most excruciating 30 seconds of hold time in my life. "Labor and delivery, how may I direct your call?" "I need to speak to Jenny Davidson, one of your nurses. It's an emergency. Hold, please." Elijah starts to cry, so I put my phone on speaker and set it in the chair so that I can pull him out of his car seat. I pace back and forth, waiting for Jenny to answer, waiting for a nurse, waiting for a doctor, waiting, waiting, waiting. "Ma'am?" I grab my phone. "Yes?" "Jenny isn't on schedule until tomorrow. She's been out on maternity leave." I shake my head, frustrated. Elijah's growing more agitated. "He's hungry." "No, she started back this morning." There's a moment of hesitation from the woman on the other line before she repeats herself. "She isn't on schedule until tomorrow. I've been here all day and she's not here." Before I start to argue with her, the doors to outside open and Jonah rushes in. He pauses for a second, almost as if he wasn't expecting to see me here already. I hang up the phone and toss it in the chair. "Thank God," I say, handing Elijah to him. I reach into the bag and pull out a pacifier. I put it in Elijah's mouth and then head back to the window and ring the bell 3 times. Jonah is standing next to me now.
"What do you know?"
"Nothing," I say, exasperated. "All I was told on the phone is that it was a car wreck." I finally look up at Jonah, and I've never seen him like this. Pale, expressionless. For a moment, I worry about him more than myself, so I take Elijah from him. He backs up to a chair and sits down. In the midst of my internal hysteria, irritation begins to claw its way out. Chris is my husband. Jonah should be worried about me more than himself right now. The waiting room is alarmingly empty. Elijah only becomes fussier, so I sit 3 seats down from Jonah and pull a bottle out of Elijah's diaper bag. It's cold, but it'll have to do. The second I put it in his mouth, he stops fussing and begins to devour it. He smells like baby powder. I close my eyes and press my cheek against the top of his warm head, hoping the distraction will keep me from breaking down. I can feel in my gut that it might not be good. If they aren't allowing us to go see Chris, that means he's probably in surgery. Hopefully for something minor. I want my sister. Jonah isn't really someone who can bring me comfort at a time like this. In fact, I'd rather he not be here. But if I can get in touch with Jenny, she'll make the situation better. And she can probably find out more information about Chris. Maybe Jonah has already spoken with her. Is Jenny on her way over? I lift my head just as Jonah swings his gaze in my direction. He doesn't answer my question. He just stares at me, his brow furrowed, so I continue. I tried calling her, but whoever answered the phone in labor and delivery kept telling me she isn't on the schedule today. Jonah's eyes squint with a shake of his head.
I'm confused, he says.
I know. I told her she started back today, but the woman tried arguing with me.
Why are you trying to call Jenny?
He's standing now. The confusion dripping from him is making me more nervous than I already am. She's my sister. Of course I'm going to call her and tell her about Chris. Jonah shakes his head.
What about Chris?
What about Chris? I'm so confused. What do you mean? They called me and said Chris was in a wreck. Why else would I be here? Jonah swallows, dragging his hands down his face. Somehow his eyes fill with even more concern.
Morgan, he steps closer to me. I'm here because Jenny was in a wreck.
If I wasn't already sitting, I would have fallen. I don't make a noise. I just stare at him and try to process everything. I shake my head and try to speak, but my words are weak. You must have misunderstood them. They can't both have been...
Wait here, Jonah says.
He strides to the window and rings the bell. I pull my cell phone out of my purse and dial Jenny's number. Voicemail again. I dial Chris's number. Maybe there was a mistake in the computer. His phone goes to voicemail too. This has to be some mistake. A few seconds pass with no sign of anyone, so Jonah moves to the doors that lead to the emergency room. He beats on them until someone finally appears at the window. A nurse I instantly recognize. Her name is Sierra. She is a daughter in Clara's class. She looks at me and then her eyes fix on Jonah.
I think there's been a mistake, Jonah says.
I'm next to him at the window, holding Elijah. I can't feel my legs. I don't even know how I walked from the chair to here. What a wreck. Who was brought in? I can't stop the questions from spilling out of me. Was it my husband or my sister? Sierra's eyes dart from me to Jonah and then down to the desk in front of her. Let me get someone who can help you, Morgan. Jonah grabs at his hair when she walks away.
Damn it.
It's not lost on me that no one seems to want to be in our presence. We're being avoided. And that terrifies me. No one wants to be the bearer of bad news. They can't both be hurt, I whisper. They can't.
They're not,
Jonah says. His voice is so full of confidence I almost believe him. But then he rubs his forehead and leans against the wall for support.
Who called you? What did they say?
The hospital? About 20 minutes ago? They specifically said Chris. There was no mention of Jenny.
Same, but they told me Jenny.
Just then, Sierra reappears, this time through the doors. You guys can come with me. She doesn't take us to a hospital room. She takes us to another waiting room, farther inside the ER. Jonah is holding Elijah now. I didn't even notice he took him from me. Sierra tells us to have a seat, but neither of us does. I don't have news on their conditions yet.
So it is both of them? Jonah asks. Jenny and Chris?
She nods. Oh my God, I whisper. I drop my head in my hands. 2 huge tears slide down my cheeks. I'm so sorry, Morgan, she says. You guys can wait in here, and as soon as I know something, I'll be back. Sierra leaves the room and closes the door. Jonah sits next to me. We've been in the emergency room less than 10 minutes, but the fact that we still don't know anything makes it seem like hours have gone by.
Maybe one of their cars broke down, Jonah mutters. That's probably why they were together.
I nod, but my mind can't even process that sentence right now. I don't know why they were together in the same car. I don't know why Jenny lied to us and said she was working today. I don't even care. I just need to know that they're okay. Jonah straps a sleeping Elijah into his car seat, then stands and begins pacing the room. I look at the time on my cell phone. I should call someone to pick up Clara, a friend of mine, or Lexi. I want someone to get to Clara before she finds out about the wreck from someone else. I should call Chris's parents. No, I'll wait. Make sure he's okay first. They live in Florida. Not much they can do from there but worry unnecessarily. Jonah calls his mother and asks if she can come pick up Elijah. Before he hangs up, I get his attention. Would she mind going to get Clara? Jonah nods in understanding, then asks his mother to pick up Clara from school. He then calls the school and hands me his phone. I let them know his mom will be picking her up. Clara's met Jonah's mother a couple of times, but she's going to be confused, and Jonah's mother isn't anyone on the pickup list for Clara. I just don't want Clara driving up here alone. She'll be full of worry and panic, and she hasn't had her license all that long. A few more minutes pass. Jonah spends it calling the police station, trying to get information about the wreck. They won't tell him much. He asks what the model of the vehicle is that was involved. It was Jenny's car, a Toyota Highlander. A male was driving, but that's all they'll tell him.
Why was Chris driving her car? Jonah asks.
I treat it as a rhetorical question, but he mutters another.
Why did she lie about working today?
I keep watching my phone as if Jenny or Chris is going to call me and tell me they're fine.
Morgan,
Jonah says. I don't look at him.
Do you think... Are they having an...
Don't say it, I spit out. I don't want to hear it or think it. It's absurd. It's incomprehensible. I stand up and start to pace the portion of the room Jonah hasn't paced yet. I've never been so irritated by sounds before. The beeping coming from the hallway, the tapping of Jonah's fingers against his phone screen as he shoots off texts to Jenny's and Chris's phones, the paging system overhead, calling doctors and nurses from one place to another, the squeaking of my shoes against the hardwood floor of this room. I'm so incredibly annoyed by every single thing, but the cacophony of sounds is the only thing I want in my head right now. I don't want to think about why Chris and Jenny were together.
Clara will be here soon, and my mother, Jonah says. We need to come up with a reason why Chris and Jenny were together.
Why lie to them? I'm sure it was a work-related thing. Jonah is staring at the floor, but I can see that his expression is full of doubt, concern, fear. I swipe tears away, and I nod because he could be right. I choose to believe he's wrong, but his mother and Clara might begin to ask us questions. They'll want specifics, or they'll start having the same thoughts Jonah and I are having. We can't tell them we don't know why they were together. It could cause unnecessary suspicion in Clara. We can tell them Chris had a flat, and Jenny gave him a ride to work, I suggest, at least until Jenny and Chris can explain it themselves. We make eye contact, something we've barely done since he walked into the emergency room. Jonah nods while pressing his lips together, and something about the look in his eyes breaks me. As if Jonah can sense I'm beginning to crack, to fade, he walks over to me and pulls me in for a comforting hug. I'm clinging to him in fear, my eyes squeezed shut, when the door finally opens. We separate. Jonah steps forward, but when I see the look on the doctor's face, I step back. He begins to speak, but I don't know exactly what he says because his words mean nothing to me. I can see our answer in his apologetic eyes, in the way his lips turn down at the corners, in his remorseful stance. When the doctor tells us there was nothing they could do, Jonah falls into a chair. I just fall.
Chapter 6 Clara. I used to collect snow globes when I was younger. They lined a shelf in my bedroom, and sometimes I would shake them up, one after the other, then sit on my bed and watch as the flurries and the glitter swirled around inside the glass. Eventually, the contents inside the globe would begin to settle. All would grow still. And then the globes on my shelf would return to their quiet, peaceful states. I liked them because they reminded me of life. How sometimes it feels like someone is shaking the world around you, and things are flying at you from every direction. But if you wait long enough, everything will start to calm. I liked that feeling of knowing that the storm inside always, eventually settles. This week proved to me that sometimes the storm doesn't settle. Sometimes the damage is too catastrophic to be repaired. For the past 5 days, since Jonah's mother showed up at my school to take me to the hospital, it feels like I've been inside a snow globe that someone shook up, then dropped. I feel like the contents of my life have shattered, and fragments of me have spilled out all over someone's dusty hardwood floor. I feel irreparably broken. And I can't even blame what happened to them on anyone but myself. It's unfair how one event, one second, can shake the world around you, toss everything on its head, ruin every happy moment that led up to that earth-shattering second. We're all walking around like lava coats our throats, painfully silent. My mother keeps asking if I'm okay, but all I can do is nod. Other than those words, she's been just as quiet as I have. It's like we're living in a nightmare, one where we don't want to eat or drink or speak. A nightmare where all we want to do is scream, but nothing comes out of our hollow throats. I'm not a crier. I guess I get that from my mother. We cried together at the hospital. So did Jonah and his mother. But as soon as we left the hospital and went to the funeral home, my mother became as poised and put together as people expect her to be. She's good at putting on a brave face in public, but she saves the tears for her bedroom. I know because I do the same thing. My father's parents flew in from Florida 3 days ago. They've been staying with us. My grandmother has been helping out around the house, and I'm sure it's been good for my mother. She's had to deal with funeral planning for not only her husband, but also her sister. Aunt Jenny's funeral was yesterday. My father's is right now. My mother insisted they be separate, which made me angry. No one wants to sit through this 2 days in a row, not even the dead. I'm not sure what's more exhausting, the days or the nights. During the days since the accident, our house has had a revolving front door. People bringing food, offering their condolences, stopping by to check in. Mostly people who worked at the hospital with my father and Aunt Jenny. The nights are spent with my face buried into my soaking wet pillow. I know my mother wants it to be over. She's ready for her in-laws to go home. I'm ready to go home. I've been holding Elijah through most of the service. I don't know why I've been wanting to hold him so much since it happened. Maybe I find his newness kind of comforting amid all this death. He begins to grow restless in my arms. He's not hungry. Jonah's mom just fed him. I changed him right before the service started. Maybe he doesn't like the noise. The preacher my mother selected to conduct the service doesn't seem to know how to hold a microphone. His lips keep brushing across it. Every time he takes a step toward the speakers, they screech. When Elijah begins to full-on cry, I first look at the end of the aisle for Jonah, but his previously occupied seat is now empty. Luckily, I'm sitting on the edge of the pew, closest to the wall. I quietly leave the room without having to walk down the middle of the aisle.
The service is beginning to wind down anyway. They'll have the prayer, and then everyone will walk past the casket and hug us, and then it'll be over. I hugged most of these same people at Aunt Jenny's funeral yesterday. I don't really feel like doing it all over again. It's part of the reason I've been insistent on holding Elijah. I can't really hug people when my arms are occupied with my baby cousin. When I'm outside the chapel and back in the foyer, I put Elijah in his stroller and take him outside. Ironically, it's a beautiful day. The sun warms my skin, but it doesn't feel good. It feels unfair. My father loved days like this. One time he called in sick and took me fishing simply because the weather was so nice.
You okay?
I glance to my left, and Jonah is leaning against the building in the shade. He pushes off the brick and walks toward us. I find it odd that he isn't inside right now. My father and Jonah were supposedly best friends, and he's skipping his service? I guess I don't have room to talk. I'm out here too. He was getting restless, so I brought him outside. Jonah places his palm on the top of Elijah's head, brushing his thumb over his forehead.
You can go back in. I'll probably just take him home now.
I'm jealous he gets to leave. I want to leave. I don't go back inside. I take a seat on a bench right outside the front door to the chapel and watch Jonah push the stroller across the parking lot. After strapping Elijah into his car seat and loading the stroller into his trunk, Jonah gives me a small wave as he climbs into the car. I wave back, unable to mask the empathy in my expression. Elijah isn't even 2 months old yet, and Jonah will be raising him alone now. Elijah will never know what Aunt Jenny was like. Maybe I should write down some of my favorite memories of her before I start to forget. That thought breathes new life into my grief. I'm going to start forgetting them. I'm sure it won't happen at first, but it will, after time. I'm going to forget how my father sounded off-key when he sang John Denver songs at the top of his lungs every time he mowed the yard. I'm going to forget how Aunt Jenny used to wink at me whenever my mother would say something that exposed her overbearing side. I'll start to forget how my father always used to smell like coffee or fresh grass, and how Aunt Jenny used to smell like honey. And before I know it, I'll forget how their voices sounded and what their faces looked like in person. A tear falls down my cheek and then another. I lie down on the bench and curl up my legs. I close my eyes and try not to get swallowed up in more guilt, but the guilt wraps its arms around me, squeezing the breath out of my lungs. Since the moment I found out they had the wreck, I knew in my gut what caused it. I was texting Aunt Jenny. She was responding to my texts at first, and then she wasn't. I never heard back from her, and then 2 hours later, I found out about the wreck. I'd like to believe it wasn't my fault, but Aunt Jenny said she was on her way to work when I texted her. I should have been more concerned about her reading my texts while driving, but I was only concerned about myself and my issues. I wonder if Mom knows my conversation with Jenny is what caused them to crash. Had I not been texting her in that moment, had I just waited until she was at work, my mother wouldn't have lost both her sister and her husband. She wouldn't be struggling right now with being forced to bury two of the most important people in her life. Jonah wouldn't have lost Jenny. Elijah wouldn't have lost his mother. I wouldn't have lost my father, the only man I've ever loved. Did they look at Aunt Jenny's phone? Could they determine she was texting and driving? If my mother does find out it was because I wanted Aunt Jenny to read my texts and respond to me when I knew she was driving, that will only add to her heartache. That knowledge makes me not want to be here at a funeral where every single tear being shed inside is all because of me.
Hey.
My eyes pop open at the sound of his voice.